Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shaunaka uvacha nirgate narade suta bhagavan badarayana shrutavams tad abhipretam tata kim akarod vibhu. Rishi Shaunaka asked, O Suta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vyasadeva heard everything from Sri Narada Muni. So after Narada's departure, what did Vyasadeva do? Purport. In this chapter, the clue for describing the Srimad Bhagavatam is picked up as Maharaj Parikshit is miraculously saved in the womb of his mother. This was caused by Droni Ashvatthama, Acharya Drona's son, who killed the five sons of Draupadi while they were asleep, for which he was punished by Arjuna. Before commencing the great epic Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Vyasadeva realized the whole truth by trance in devotion.
Omaganitimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vancha kalpa taru bhyascha kripa shindu bhavacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So Shaunaka Rishi is the enthusiastic hero who serves as a impetus to impel the story of the Srimad Bhagavatam to be continued to be narrated. So throughout the dialogue, because this is at Naimisharanya, if we can put it again in context, the sages of Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami, how did Vyasadeva get the inspiration to write the Srimad Bhagavatam? So Suta Goswami has been narrating that story, and he's just come to the part in the story. I wouldn't say story, but he came to the part in the history where Narada told Vyasadeva, you know, I've explained to you my birth and activities for self-realization. As you have asked, I've now explained my birth and activities. And then Narada Muni left playing his veena on his own free will. He just left. And we've been hearing about Narada Muni's instructions to Vyasadeva since the fourth chapter. So it's quite an extensive, narrative by Narada Muni on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in relationship to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and also illustrating the glories of Krishna Katha by his own personal activities and birth and how he became liberated. It was quite inspiring. And then after answering that inquiry by Vyasadeva of why I am despondent, Vyasadeva was inquiring about his despondency, and Narada Muni explained to him, you haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna, and then explained through his life how powerful and how wonderful it is, the effects of hearing Krishna Katha. He got up on, he just left by his own free will. So Shaunaka Rishi, hearing this, asked a natural question after Vyasadeva heard everything from Narada Muni. After the departure, what did he do? And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that this chapter will also begin to explain the wonderful story of Maharaj Prickett, which really is the story of how the Srimad Bhagavatam appeared, because the Srimad Bhagavatam appears to Maharaj Prickett at the end of his life. So this story will begin, the story of Maharaj Prickett also. So Sutta will now answer.
Sutta uvacha brahmanadyam sarasvatyam ashrama paschametate samyaprasa iti prokta rishinam satravardhana.
Translation. Sri Sutta said, on the western bank of the river Saraswati, which is intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation at Samyapras, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages. So this is describing, we'll be describing what Vyas did. He was meditating. He was following Narada's instructions, which were given previously to meditate on the Krishna's pastimes for the benefit of everyone. So here it is. Sutta Goswami begins to describe his ashram. And in the purport, Prabhupada makes a very pertinent point. For spiritual advancement of knowledge, a suitable place and atmosphere are definitely required. We're definitely experiencing this at Gita Nagari, in the cabin. That for our advancement of knowledge, the place is very, very important. So this is called ashram. Is a place where spiritual culture is foremost. And kiva vipa kiva nyasi kena sudrahoi ye krishna veta tattva segruha. It doesn't really matter what particular ashram you're in. It's still ashram if it's done properly. But at the same time, Prabhupada explains in the purport, all ashrams belong to the same mission, namely realization of the Supreme. And none are less important as far as spiritual culture is concerned. The difference is a matter of formality on the strength of renunciation. The sannyasis are held high in estimation on the strength of practical renunciation. So any situation is a situation for spiritual life. And basically, ultimately, spiritual life means to do what Krishna wants. So according to your conditioning, or nature, or proclivities, you get a different duty. One person's a grihastha, one person's a sannyasi, one person's a brahmachari, etc. But if you do your duty in Krishna consciousness perfectly, you're fully surrendered. And therefore, there is no sense difference in that sense between a sannyasi who does his duty perfectly and a grihastha who does his duty perfectly. But still, the duty of a sannyasi has to deal more with staying aloof from the objects of the senses. That type of renunciation. And therefore, on that basis, they're held in high estimation, on the basis of practical renunciation. In other words, their duties entail more practical, more degree of renunciation. Okay, text 3.
Tasmin sva asvame vyaso parari sandamandate asino pa upasprishya pranidadhyao manasvayam.
In that place, Srila Vyasadeva in his own ashram, which was surrounded by berry trees, sat down to meditate after touching water for purification. So, therefore, his ashram is known as Badarik Ashram, because of the Badari, these little berries. You see them in Braj, Vrindavan. When you go on the Prikram path, maybe my favorite place in Vrindavan, one of my favorite places, when you go all the way around the Prikram path, at the very end part, before you turn, either you have to go straight to Mathura or you turn right going back to Vrindavan, that area is also, you'll find these buttery, these berries. And some of the Brijvasis there say that that's actually Buttarik Ashram. This is Lok Pramana. It's village talk. I'm not saying this is actual fact, because they say to write the Srimad Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva had to do it in Vrindavan and not in the Himalayas, which is so cold and bare. This is what they say. Text 4. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranayate male apashyat purusham purnam mayam chitarapasayam. Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it, by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, along with his external energy, which was under full control. So, this answers the question of how Vyas meditated and what he saw and what he did after the departure of Narada Muni. And it's, in one sense, these next three verses are some of the most important verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's on the basis of this vision that he compiled and wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Vyasadeva is glorifying the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, Srimad Bhagavate Maha Muni Krite, that it was written in the maturity of realization of Maha Muni. Of course, it's not egotistic, and also the Acharyas also relate that when Vyasadeva said Maha Muni, he meant that it was inspired by Krishna, who's the greatest Muni. But still, that's the glory. It was the maturity of his realization. And this is the maturity of his realization. After feeling unaccomplished and insufficient in his realization, and being corrected by his spiritual master. So he wrote the Bhagavatam after his mature realization. This verse is his mature realization and explains how he got it. Before explaining the verse, should also mention that this meditation is based on the direct instruction of Narada Muni. Because in a previous verse, when Narada Muni was chastising, we haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna, then he told him what to do. He said, Arukramas yakila bandha muktaye samadhina nusmara tadvacheshtitam. Tadvacheshtitam means pastimes. And samadhina, you should think and meditate on the pastimes of the Supreme Lord for bandha muktaye, for the liberation of everyone. Because his goal, Vyasadeva, his original meditation was to think what to do for the liberation of everyone. So he was previously told this. And then after Narada Muni told Vyasadeva to do this, then he explained about his life just to encourage him what will happen if one actually chants and hears and meditates on Krishna. So therefore, to get the realization to write the Bhagavatam, it says, bhakti yogena manasi. He linked his mind in devotional service. And actually, to hear or speak the Bhagavatam, you also have to do it in devotional service. Bhakti yogena manasi. You have to do it in the mood of bhakti. Bhakti means in the mood of satisfying Krishna. Not in any egotistical way. We're not trying to get knowledge. We're not trying to speak knowledge to get followers or impress people or to get money from it. And we're not hearing it to become more powerful. We're doing everything to satisfy Krishna. So this was his meditation. Bhakti yogena meh. He went into meditation, but his meditation and thoughts were a very intense concentration and prayer to Krishna that for your satisfaction reveal the absolute truth to me. So this is the process. The first thing is so pronounced in this verse is what method he used to get his realization. It was bhakti yoga. Because only by bhakti yoga is realization of Bhagavan possible. And that was also presented by Sutta Goswami when he answered the sages of Namisharanya's question, what is the ultimate absolute good? And he came to the point, in his answer, he came to the point that life is meant to realize the truth. And how is the truth realized? Tatshradhayana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaye pashyantyatmani chatmani bhakta shuddha grihitaya. That you perform devotional service. Pashyantyatmani chatmani, and then you actually see the absolute truth. Tatshradhayana munayo. And Shradhayana means one who is very serious, the faithful and inquisitive sage. So the same thing is here. He fixed his mind in bhakti yoga, but what type of bhakti yoga? Pure devotional service. There was no other conception in his mind but the pleasure of Krishna. And therefore it says, samyak praniyate malay, without any contamination or distraction. Malay means dirt. Without any amalay. What does it say here? Without any matter. Without any material conception. Samyak means completely, perfectly. Praniyate, he engaged his mind. So this is the process of bhakti yoga. I'm thinking of in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma jnabhritam. No other desire. This is uttama bhakti. And in Bhagavad Gita, I think it's Bhagavad Gita 8:14. Ananya cheta satatam yo mam smarati nityasa tasya ham dulabha partha nitya yuktasya yogina. Ananya cheta satatam, without anything else in the consciousness, yo mam smarati nityasa. He was thinking like this, without any contamination of matter, pure. And then, what did he see? Apashyat purusham purnam. Prabhupada specifically points out that Vyasadeva did not take notice of the effulgence of Brahman, because that is not the absolute vision. Apashyat purusham purnam means he saw the absolute person. He saw the personality of Godhead. He didn't see Brahman, but Purusham Purnam. And Maya Chittad Apasrayam. And he saw that the illusory energy, the external energy, Apasrayam, was under full subjugation and control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is quite different than Mayavad philosophy. Mayavad philosophy basically means, without getting into too many of the details, that Mayavadis believe that Brahman, covered by Maya or illusion, develops the distinctions of Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, and Jiva, the living entity. So in other words, Maya is greater than Ishvara. That Maya is greater than Ishvara. It subjugates Ishvara. But here, Ishvara, or the control of the Supreme Lord, is subjugating Maya. And also the Prophet in the purport mentions also another interesting point. The internal energy is there along with the absolute person as the moonlight is there with the moon. This is a comment by the Acharyas that Prabhupada is commenting on. So this is also means that he saw his internal potency, which means, it means what Vyasadeva saw, he saw Krishna as eternal potency. So what is Krishna, seeing Krishna and his internal potency means? It means Krishna exchanging with his internal potency. Krishna exchanges or enjoys his different energies. So he saw Krishna exchanging with his internal energy. That means Vrindavan. Because that's what Vrindavan is. The internal energy is the Samvit Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, which is in the devotees' hearts. And Vrindavan means that Krishna is exchanging with his internal potency, and therefore enjoying his pleasure potency. So he also saw Vrindavan and Vrindavan's pastimes. So he had the complete vision of the Absolute Truth. Okay, text 5.
Ya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manyate nartam tatkritam cha vipadyate.
Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product, and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. So he also saw the Jiva Shakti. And he saw the Jiva Shakti in relationship to the external energy. The external energy was under the control of Krishna, but the living entity was identifying with the external energy, and therefore undergoing the reactions and transformations of the material energy, which is called suffering. So he saw the cause of the living entity suffering. And the cause of the living entity's suffering was not his actual situation, but what the living entity was thinking. The living entity was thinking that I am a product of matter, and therefore suffering, the reactions, which are not actually in the soul, but in matter, but suffering them due to his identification with them. Prakriti purusho sto hi, in the Bhagavad Gita. The purusho is situated in the prakriti. Why? Bhunte bojiyate chaiva, I think. Due to his desire to enjoy. A position which he cannot have by his own constitution. So this is his vision. He saw this cause of enjoying, this cause of suffering of a living entity. I was thinking if I can explain it in a simple way. When the living entity is not satisfied, living entity is not satisfied with his nature is that he's a servant of Krishna. That's what we are. When he's not satisfied with his nature, then to satisfy his desire, Krishna has to put him in illusion. Our nature is as the servant. When we're not satisfied with that nature and we want to be the enjoyer, then Krishna has to put the living entity in the illusion that he's the enjoyer, because the position of enjoyer is something which we cannot have by our own nature or constitution. There's one verse that can help me understand how this happens. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo vidadati kama. That there's one supreme eternal living force who's the enjoyer. And then there's Chaito, Chaitananam, Nityo, Nityanam, and there's many living entities, but there's one supreme joy. And the Eko,
Bahunam yovadadati kamat. The one tries to fill the desires of the many.
So when the living entity desires something that is beyond what he can attain within his constitution or nature, then the Supreme Lord puts the living entity into the illusion that he is the enjoyer. So the illusory energy follows the devotee's desire, which cannot be achieved within what he is. When your desire cannot be achieved, in what you are, then that desire can only be satisfied in illusion. So this is what he saw. He's soaring, therefore, the living entity's consciousness reflected on matter, thinking he's matter, which allows him to have the conception that I am the enjoyer and controller. So this is what he saw. And very interesting here, Prabhupada, therefore, I want to read the purport a little bit. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says, the living entity misunderstands himself to be a material product. This means that the present perverted way of thinking, feeling, and willing under material conditions is not natural for him, for he has his normal way of thinking, feeling, and willing. So, the living entity who's thinking that he's the body, thinking he's the body means, that's ahankara. It's false conception. And what's the false conception? Ahankara. I am the doer, I am the controller. So that's the false conception of the living entity. So that, and when we think that way, it's a perverted type of thinking, feeling, and willing. It's an illusory type of thinking, feeling. It's thinking something that we're not. So our present state of consciousness, where we're thinking in some ways that we're the controller and we're the enjoyer, our thinking, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, our feeling, I want to enjoy, I want to control, our willing, I will do this, I will conquer, I will get ahead. This is a perverted way of thinking. It's not natural. It's just like sometimes the example is that in a crazy house, someone thinks he's Napoleon. And therefore, even though he's very short, the person is maybe very short, and he has a strong desire to be the controller. So Napoleon was very short, and he was a big king and controller. So living entity has that desire, so he can't fulfill it because of his nature. The particular person, and therefore he thinks he's Napoleon. So there's always in those movies kind of like a joke of a crazy person, because Napoleon always had his hand in his shirt. He's thinking that he's the controller. So what is he thinking? He's thinking, I am a big king. He's not a big king. You know, and he's feeling, I am so powerful. He's not powerful. And I will order people. But this is not his natural position. So the natural position, the real position, when a living entity is free from illusion, is that he's a devotee. That he's thinking of Krishna. That's very natural. That he's feeling devotion for Krishna. Willing, and that he wants to do devotional service. So he saw this. Vyasadeva saw this. And the purport Prabhupada discusses also the role of the illusory energy, that it puts the living entity under illusion on Krishna's behalf to rectify the living entity, because he's in an unnatural condition. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, the child is rebellious from the father, so he's in an unnatural position, because the son
should be serving the father. But the son is rebelling. So the father puts him under an agent to chastise him, to correct him. So this is what's happening to this is the role of the illusory energy. And then in the purport, Prabhupada also discusses, he goes on a little bit of how the living entity gets free. So, if it's our desire to be the enjoyer, a position which we cannot have by our own constitution, a position which only can be fulfilled in illusion, and therefore causes to identify with the body by the influence of the illusory energy that's sent by Krishna, so that illusory energy or maya is simply following our desire, because we don't want to be what we are, and therefore we have to be put in illusion to satisfy that desire. So if we just change the desire, we'll become free from illusion, because the illusion is simply just following our desire to be what we're not, which is an enjoyer and controller. So when you surrender to Krishna, in other words, when you surrender to Krishna and start developing the desire for what you are, then there's no need for any energy to put you in illusion to fulfill your desire. So this is the process of getting free from illusion. We just have to desire what we are, and we have to act on the platform of what we are, which is a servant of Krishna. And then when we do that, then that illusory energy, which is under Krishna and has been sent to fulfill a desire, which you can only attain in illusion, then Krishna withdraws that. And this is the verse Prabhupada quoted in Bhagavad Gita. Daivi esha gunamayi mama maya daratya mameva ye papadyante mayam etam tarantite. Daivi esha gunamayi mama maya daratya. It's impossible to overcome the illusory energy, because it's Krishna's illusory energy. And we can only become free from that illusory energy when Krishna wants to withdraw that energy. So because Krishna has only put us in illusion because of our desire to be independent and separate from him, then when we change that desire, then Krishna will withdraw that illusion. Because the illusion is only following our desire to have something which we cannot have by our nature. So mayam eva papadyante, mayam eva tarante. So when you surrender, it's withdrawn. And then Prabhupada talks about that, how that surrendering process happens, and the conditioned soul, the Lord has suggested, therefore, by the influence of speeches of saintly persons who have actually realized the Supreme, men are engaged in his transcendental loving service. The conditioned soul gets a taste for hearing about the Lord, and by such hearing only is he gradually elevated to the platform of respect, devotion, and attachment. The whole thing is completed by the surrendering process. So this is why Vyasadeva is going to present the Srimad Bhagavatam, so that people can hear and therefore change their attitude and change their desire, and therefore by changing their desire, becoming free from the illusion that's caused by the desire to control and enjoy. So another point that Prabhupada says, this means that the conditioned souls are being reclaimed by the Lord both ways, namely by the process of punishment by the external energy of the Lord, and by himself as the spiritual master within and without. So this is the process. We want to enjoy separate from Krishna, which is an unnatural position, which is not healthy for the soul. Then Krishna's agent Maya chastises us. And at the same time that Krishna's agent Maya chastises us, Krishna makes arrangement for the conditioned soul to be educated according to sadharma, according to correct behavior. Now, one other point that Prabhupada gleams from this purport is, and these verses, is how Vyasadeva's vision as the compiler of the Vedas contradicts the Mayavadi conclusions, and therefore the Mayavadi conclusions are insufficient or wrong. He said, because in his vision, the Lord is in a superior position, and the living entity is in an inferior position. The Lord is above Maya, and the living entity is subjugated by Maya. So how can the Lord and the living entity be the same? And how can the Supreme Lord, if he's in a superior position to the illusory energy, how can he be subjected by it? And therefore Prabhupada said, it is clear from the present statement of Bhagavatam that the same external energy is situated in the inferior position before the personality of God or the perfect living being. The living being is subjected, but the Supreme Lord is in the superior position. And Prabhupada said, had the Lord and the living entity been the same, then Srila Shukadeva Goswami would not have taken the trouble to describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, for they would all be a manifestation of the illusory energy. If the living entity and the Supreme Lord were the same, that means that the Supreme Lord would be subject to Maya. So why describe his pastimes? Why would Vyasadeva? Another point, Prabhupada says, another point is distinct herein. The eternal relationship between the Lord and the living being is transcendental. Otherwise, the Lord would not have taken the trouble to reclaim the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya. In other words, it's an eternal relationship. It's not when the living entity becomes free from Maya, then he has no relationship with God. Okay, well, now we'll go to the next verse. Anarto pasamam sakshad bhakti yogam madoksaje lokasya janato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So text 4, which Vyasa's vision of reality, text 5, which he just completed, is the cause of living entity's problem, and 6 is the cause of the removal of the problem. When you know the cause of the problem, you know the cause of the removal of the problem. The cause of the problem is the living entity is thinking himself matter, which is the arrangement Krishna has to allow him to fantasize that he is the enjoyer, a position which he is not. And therefore, the solution is to change that conception or thinking from I want to enjoy and control to I want to serve. And therefore, the miseries which are not in the soul but which are in matter can be mitigated when you cease to identify with matter. You're identifying with matter to be the controller and the enjoyer. So when you perform devotional service which inspires within the heart an attraction for Krishna, God, an attraction for our position as his servant, then you become free from the conception that causes you to identify with matter and free from the suffering, which are the material miseries, which are superfluous miseries and are in matter. And because Vyasadeva had this vision, therefore
Lokasya janato vidvams chakre sattvata samhitam. Therefore, he compiled this Vedic literature for those who are ignorant. Purport Prabhupada says, revival of the dormant affection of love of Godhead. This is the process. It is very interesting, but it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere effort of the devotee, he may endow him with his loving transcendental service. So, it depends on Krishna's mercy, but our sincere effort can attract his mercy. When we really want to be his servant, he can inspire us with devotion by his kindness. But even with the prescribed forms of hearing and chanting, there is at once mitigation of superfluous and unwanted miseries of material existence. In other words, even if the devotion is not there, even if it is mechanical, if you at least have the sincerity and devotion to take to the process of chanting and hearing, still you'll become purified. Text 7. Yasyam vai shuyamanayam Krishna paramapurushe bhaktir upadyate pumsa shokamoha bayapaha. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. So this is how you become free from material inebrities, by the process of hearing and oral reception, by hearing submissively this Vedic literature. Bhakti or devotion sprouts up in the heart, and when bhakti or devotion sprouts up in the heart, then everything else that's inauspicious goes from the heart. Prabhupada discusses in the purport that there are various senses of which the ear is most effective. This sense works even when a man is deep asleep. One can protect himself from the hands of an enemy while awake, but while asleep, one is protected by the ear only. The importance of hearing is mentioning here in connection with attaining the highest perfection of life, namely getting free from the three material pangs. So this is a summary of the process of bhakti yoga and how it works to free us from all suffering and material inebrieties. As soon as bhakti comes into the heart, our life becomes auspicious. And it means that our sinful reactions diminish. I was thinking of two verses in the Bhagavad Gita. One is, we quote many times, mayasaktam anaparta yogam yunjan marasaya asamsayam samagrama yatas gyas yasi tatrinu. Krishna tells Arjuna about bhakti yoga, just hear. And Prabhupada in the purport said, hearing is the first essential. Just hear. How by full consciousness of me. So by hearing, your consciousness gets focused on Krishna. And when your consciousness gets focused on Krishna, you become attracted to Krishna. How by full consciousness of me, mind attached to me, you become attached to Krishna. This is the whole process of Krishna consciousness. By hearing the pastimes of Krishna and chanting the holy name of Krishna, when our mind is, consciousness is focused on Krishna, who is the supreme attractive. Krishna means all attractive. We become attached to him, and therefore we become attached to devotional service, and we become attached to our constitutional position as his servant.
And then when we become attached to that position, and we become attached to serving Krishna and surrendering to him, then mayam eva papadyante, mayam etam tarantite, then Krishna withdraws the illusory energy. In later on, Maharaj Prickett asks how the living entity gets entangled in matter, and Sukadeva Goswami answers, the first sinful desire of the living entity is to put us in illusion, is caused by our desire to enjoy separate from him. So when we develop the desire to satisfy Krishna and be his servant, rather than to satisfy our own senses and become the controller and enjoyer, then we become free from the illusory energy and all miseries. So this verse is describing how that process works, described in verse 6, and why Vyasadeva wrote this literature, compiled this literature. Because this is how the process works. Just Bhagavad Gita again, 7.1. Just hear from me how consciousness focused on me, mind becomes attached to me, and one becomes free from all miseries and doubts. There's also a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's 10.11, how by executing devotional service with the torchlight of knowledge, all nations, everything goes automatically by the process of Krishna consciousness. So first all reception, then bhakti sprouts up, then illusion, lamentation are all destroyed. In a commentary by Sridhar Swami, he said, Srimad Bhagavatam thus destroys evil. In addition, devotion to Krishna is generated by hearing. And also here, it says, Krishna Parama Parama Purushe. So when he said a Pashyat Purusham Purnam, it's confirmed here by Vyasadeva that what he's seeing is Krishna. Prabhupada said Srila Vyasadeva saw the all-perfect personality of Godhead. And in this statement, the all-perfect personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is clearly confirmed. And just another interesting point by Prabhupada. Understanding this verse, you understand how one becomes individually peaceful by Krishna consciousness and how the propagation of the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is the method to remove materialism and anxiety. Prabhupada said, under the false conception, the living entity in the different categories of life becomes, and he says, as mentioned before, a living entity develops a sort of complexity by material association, and the illusory engagement of the material body is accepted as an actual fact. Under such false complexity, living beings under different categories of life become illusioned in different ways. Even in the most developed stage of human life, the same illusion prevails in the form of many isms, and divides the loving relation with the Lord, and therefore divides the loving relationship between man and man. So when you think you're the enjoyer and controller, it not only separates you from God, but it separates you from others. If you think you're the servant of God, then you're the same as everyone else. There's a unity among everyone in that conception. But if you think you're the controller, then you'll see everyone else as the controller. And then there'll be conflict. And that conception of the self can be extended. You can identify with the family as the self. And then when your family is glorious, then you enjoy, because you're identifying that the concept that you're the body is a mental conception. And therefore it can be extended to the family. And then you'll be against other families. Or nations. You'll identify with the nation, and therefore when your country wins the war or the World Cup, then you'll feel like, I am great. I am the enjoyer. I am controlling by identification. and therefore there's conflicts between others. So Prabhupada, in a very practical way, is showing how the dissemination of the Srimad Bhagavatam and spiritual knowledge is the peace formula. By hearing the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, this false complexity of materialism is removed, and the real peace in society begins, which politicians aspire for so eagerly in so many political situations. The politicians want a peaceful situation between man and man and nation, but at the same time, because of too much attachment for material domination, there is illusion and fearfulness. Therefore, the politicians' peace conferences cannot bring about peace in society. It may be only done by hearing the subject matter described in Srimad Bhagavatam. The foolish politicians go on holding peace and summit conferences for hundreds of years, but they will fail to achieve success. So, this is also described. And it's no doubt that Vyas came to this conclusion that this will bring individual and collective peace, because Narada Muni had instructed him, Tad Vagvi Sargo Jana Tagna Viplavo Yasmin Prati Shlokam Abhadabhadyapi, that this Bhagavatam would cause a revolution in the hearts, a complete change in the hearts of impious, sinful men, who are thinking, I am the controllers and I am the enjoyers. And will make them think that I am the servant of Krishna. And that will bring real unity. Prabhupada gives a simple example sometimes, is if you throw a rock in a pond, and many, many rocks in the pond, but they all hit the center, then there'll be concentric circles that don't conflict. But if you throw rocks in different places, then the waves that they make will conflict with each other. And the analogy is similarly, if we put God at the center and everybody has God at the center, then there's going to be natural unity. So we'll go on. Sasamitam bhagavatim kritva nu kramyachatmajam shukam adhyapayamasa nivritti niratam muni. The great sage Vyasadeva, after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his own son, Sri Shukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. So, we've just finished now Sutta Goswami's answer to the question about how Vyasadeva compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. And now he's going to discuss a little bit in concerning their second inquiry about Sukadeva Goswami. And very interesting here, it describes now Vyas. It says, after compiling it and revising it, he taught it to his son. So Prabhupada in the purport mentions that, therefore, it's not that the Bhagavatam was written later, recounting the historical fact of Maharaj Prickett and Sukadeva Goswami. It was written before. So it's 5,000 years old. And he taught it to his son, who is Nivritti Niratam. Nivritti Niratam means was already engaged in self-realization. He was already detached and but the point that Prabhupada will make here is that although it is especially meant for Paramahamsas or those totally engaged in self-realization, it works into the depths of the hearts of those who may be worldly men. Worldly men are engaged in sense gratification, but even such men will find this Vedic literature a remedial measure for their material diseases. So it attracted Sukadeva Goswami, who was a liberated soul. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is for liberated souls. Dharma, Projita, Kaita, Votra, Paramo, Namatsara, Namsatam. Namatsara. It's for Namatsara, people who have no envy, who are pure in heart. But it also works in this other way. And therefore, Vyasadeva is disseminating it to Sukadeva Goswami. Shaunaka uvacha savai nivritti nirita sarvatro pekshako muni kasyava brihatim etam atmarama samabhyasat.
Sri Shaunaka asked Suta Goswami, Sri Shukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization. And thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? So in the previous verse, Shukadeva Goswami was described as Nivritta Niratam. He was already self-realized. So he's now the Shonaka. Very good question. If he was self-realized, then why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of vast literature? And then text 10 is Sutta's answer. And this is a very, very famous verse. Basically, the answer is when you're self-realized means that you're self-satisfied. You have no desire for anything material. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the vast literature, which describes Krishna's qualities? Because Krishna's qualities have nothing to do with the material world. And therefore they can attract even liberated souls who have nothing to do with the material world. But this is a very, very famous verse. Atmaramas chamunayo niyagranta apyukrame kurvanta hoita kim bhaktim itam bhuta guno hari. All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in the Atma or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. So this and the next verse are the last ones. So, anyway, I basically explain the purport, this, and the conclusion, the fact that someone who is completely detached from the world is Sukadeva Goswami, who is so detached that he had no desire to even come out of his mother's womb, was attracted to the Srimad Bhagavatam, means that the Lord's qualities are transcendental and can attract everyone. So this verse has many, many words, and each of the words can be explained, has many, many meanings, but all the meanings are just different ways of explaining how Krishna's qualities are so wonderful that they can attract anyone. And Lord Chaitanya explained this Atmarama shloka very vividly before his chief devotee, Sanatana Goswami. He points out 11 factors in the shloka, so all the words, there are 11 words. He explained each word in many ways, so he explained 64 different ways in which Krishna's qualities are transcendental and therefore can attract the conditioned souls. For example, the word munya refers to those who are thoughtful, those who are grave and silent, ascetics, persistent, mendicant, sages, all become attracted by Krishna's qualities. And nirgrantha means one who is liberated, one who has no connection with spiritual injunctions and are spontaneously attracted to spiritual, a capitalist, all become attracted. This word arukrama, it describes Krishna, it means one whose activities are glorious, which means his activities cannot be compared to anyone else. And therefore the word arukrama is just applicable to him only. And therefore he can attract everyone. And the word kurvanti, I'm just going to go, refers to things for someone else. So it means that Atmaramas do things not for their personal interest. It's not sense gratification, devotional service, but it's spiritual because it's selfless. They're doing it completely for the Supreme Lord. And then there's a word called hoitaki. So Prabhupada takes the root. Hetu means causeless. It means people do things for a personal reason. And it's described here what they are: material enjoyment, mystic powers, liberation. So hoitaki means
that when you do things for Krishna, the Atmaramas, when they serve Krishna, it's not that they're engaged in sense gratification. It means that they're doing it without any personal cause, just for the satisfaction of Krishna. And therefore, Prabhupada says, unalloyed devotion means service to Krishna without desire for the above-mentioned benefits. And the powerful personality of Godhead can be fully satisfied by such unalloyed devotees, free from all sorts of desire for personal benefit. Then in the purport, I'm not going to go over it all, Prabhupada gives commentary on this word, ahoitaki, pure devotional service. He said it can be practiced at sadhana bhakti, and then it gradually develops into 9 progressive stages. Then Prabhupada lists the stages of prema bhakti, which is attachment, which is raga, love, which is prema, affection, which is sneha, feelings, which is praniyai, affinity, which is anurag. Oh, anurag is following. Ecstasy, which is bhava, and intense feelings, this is mahabhav. Very interesting. And then Prabhupada, this is just a point, the attachment of an inactive devotee develops up to the stage of transcendental love. So those in Shantaras can go to the stage of prema in prema bhakti. Attachment of an active servitor develops up to the stage of adherence. For a friendly devotee, that's sukyaras, develops up to the stage of following. That's anurag. And conjugal love develops to the stage of intense feeling of separation. That's mahabhava. Then, according to the Hari Bhakti Shudaya, the import of the word itam bhut is complete bliss. So it says that the qualities are so completely blissful that Krishna's qualities can attract everyone. And Prabhupada said the personal form, Sri Krishna, is so attractive that it comprehends all attraction, all bliss, and all taste, rasas. These attractions are so strong that no one wants to exchange them for material enjoyment, mystic power, and liberation. No one wants to give up bhakti for anything material. It surpasses everything. In Nectar Devotion is a chapter, devotional service surpasses liberation. There's so many verses that it's superior. There's one verse by Prithu Maharaj. He said that, some people desire liberation. But when I hear Krishna's glories, I desire millions of tongues and millions of ears. People try to become liberated from the bodily concept of life. But he's desiring millions of ears, millions of tongues. There's so many verses like that. And one is the Atmarama verse. Anyway, the verse goes on. Prabhupada describes liberated souls that became attracted to Krishna, how his pastimes attracted the 4 Kumaras, who also, liberated souls. And then the word Hari conveys various meanings, but the chief import of the word is that he who vanquishes everything inauspicious and takes away the mind of the devotee. So Krishna is Hari. He can attract the mind of everyone. So the conclusion is, so by interpreting each and every word of the shloka, one could see unlimited pastimes, unlimited numbers of transcendental qualities of Lord Krishna that attract the minds of pure devotees. Text 11, and we'll finish. Hare Aguna Kshipta Matir Bhagavan Badarayana Ajagan Maharakyanam Nityam Vishnu Janapriya. Sukadeva Goswami, son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus he underwent the study of the great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, that story was also mentioned before, that he was liberated within the womb of his mother. And he would not stay home, but Vyas gave him a synopsis of the Bhagavatam that made him attracted to the transcendental qualities of Krishna. And then, after he was born, he became more and more educated in the Bhagavatam. Even though he was attached to the impersonal Brahman, by the association of pure devotees like Vyasadeva, even the liberated soul becomes attached to the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Prabhupada writes, the transcendental qualities of the Lord are so attractive that Sukadeva Goswami became detached from being completely absorbed in impersonal Brahman and positively took up the personal activity of the Lord. Practically, he was thrown from the impersonal conception of the Absolute. Thinking within himself that he had simply wasted so much time in devoting himself to the impersonal feature of the Supreme. So this is described in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Just briefly, when Sukadeva Goswami was born at 16, he left home. And then his father sent his disciples out to look for him. And the disciples began chanting some verses from the Bhagavatam. And by hearing those verses, he became attracted, and when they went back to Vyasadeva's ashram, he followed them back. He was so attracted. And I have the numbers here, which is 3223, which describes Krishna's mercy, ahobakiyam, kula, stana, kutam, that all, how Krishna was so merciful that even though Putin approached him with deadly poison on her breast to kill him, because she approaches a nurse, she got the same destination as his mother. So when he heard how merciful he was, and then there's some verses from the Bhagavatam, which is Lord Brahma's description of Krishna with a peacock feather and going out into the forest and playing his flute. These verses were quoted. And the last point I want to make here, that it said he was Vishnu Janapriya, and Prabhupada discussed, he was dear to the devotees, and the devotees became dear to him. In other words, he liked the devotees, and Prabhupada in the purport said, devotees and impersonalists, they, from time immemorial, they have become competitors, and they like to keep separate from each other because of the ultimate personal and impersonal realizations. In other words, the devotees do not like the impersonalist, and similarly, the impersonalists are unable to evaluate the devotees. It's therefore, it appears that Sukadeva Goswami had no liking for the devotees. But since he himself became saturated devotee, he desired always the transcendental association of saturated devotees. He desired always the transcendental association of the Vishnu Janas. And the Vishnu Janas also liked him, since he became a personal Bhagavata. So he became Vishnu Janapriya. So are there any questions?
I was just thinking when you were talking before about putting Krishna in the center and how that's the basis of unity among all the living entities. We never hear like a really direct description of how to do that really practically, or what it exactly means.
It means that people become centered on Krishna's pleasure, and they become really fixed in the idea that they're the servant. At least that's the, I mean, they become really bhakti. I mean, it's actually how to do it. It has to be by chanting and hearing. That's the process. It has to be by Sankirtan and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. In any way, you have to be in a society that's immersed in Krishna Katha. And when it's immersed in Krishna Katha, then there's a unity among the devotees because they have bhakti. They want to satisfy Krishna. And the conflict arises is when people have ahankara, false ego, false identity. I'm the controller. I'm the enjoyer. I think it's also mentioned in the second canto that I forgot that it's maybe the second verse, what a grihamedi is. He's not focused on giving Krishna pleasure. Then he becomes focused on his family and therefore sees other people as competitors to him. And then you become envious of others. In other words, that's what, you know, if you're in material consciousness, then your goal is to compete, to get, you know, your enjoyment entails your superiority. If you don't have that sense of bhakti, then your goal in life is to become superior. And therefore others become your competitors. And therefore there's all kinds of conflict. So how to do it really has to be, society has to be based on Krishna Katha. And, you know, the mission, satisfying Guru, satisfying Krishna, that will create unity. There may be conflicts, but at least people, it will progress because people are becoming purified. And I think you can see if advanced devotees get together, there should be this unity.
It seems, you know, that there isn't though. And that there's, well, Prabhupada says in here, I'm going to change the language just to paraphrase it, but, that actually, you know, everyone has, Krishna is absolute, but everyone has a relative relationship with him. So each devotee will see Krishna, and he says something, devotees become attracted, one person will become attracted to this quality of Krishna, yeah. Someone. So that itself seems to be sometimes a source of conflict, even among devotees. And we say that maybe because of their impurities, but even you read in the scriptures, sometimes it's even among very advanced devotees that even the conception of Krishna is different and it causes conflict. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, what is the
I think there may be two types of conflict. I mean, there can be a healthy conflict too, like competing to please Krishna. Just like I think Lord Chaitanya had the conflict with people in South India who had the conception of Krishna as the absolute, as Narayan. But at the end it was kind of resolved because Narayan is Krishna, it's the same thing. So I think that's at a different level. And I think in the material world, as long as you're here in the bodily concept of life, some conflicts can arise. But I think we have to see it relative to other conflicts without Krishna Katha. The International Society of Krishna Consciousness has some extra sources of conflict to overcome, and that is, it's a society that brings together people in close community from very diverse cultures. It's just like a marriage. If both the husband and the wife are very, very Krishna conscious, then despite the incompatibility, there's a chance of them getting along. But the fact that they're incompatible is going to cause some strife. But the fact that they're Krishna conscious is going to help it. So if two people are going to get married, but they're really both very Krishna conscious, there's a chance it's going to get along. And even if they're not Krishna conscious, they're compatible, there's a chance they'll get along on another platform. But you can see that Krishna consciousness will help it when there's that mood of satisfying Krishna. And I've seen when people are like that, then somehow or other, and initially, I don't want to mention names, but I can think of couples that are quite different, and then by the devotion to Krishna unified them. So, I think that's it. But it's unfortunate that we're not more deeply immersed in Krishna Katha and devotional service, because then I think we would see a lot less conflicts. Because I think an advanced devotee that doesn't care so much what people think about him, or, you know, like Jetta Bhart, you know, someone, you know, if you're on that platform, you don't think so much about it. Anything else?
I have something else, but I'm not quite sure how to word it. Do you think it's impersonal for a devotee to think that, you know, to make relationships non-conflictual, that their relationship with Krishna, everything is based on their own relationship with Krishna. So if they're having, in other words, if they're having exchanges with somebody else, either conflictual or non-conflictual, that's whatever's going on. It's an impetus for them, you know, to have exchange with Krishna. And so that kind of takes the weight off.
Let me see if I can paraphrase it.
Yes, sorry, I'm not saying it very clear.
I think I have the idea, but I'm maybe not so sure to express. There's some kind, if you're focused on Krishna and your relationship with Krishna, and that's what's really important to you, then you're not so affected if other relationships don't work out so much. Because that's your real goal is to satisfy Krishna. So you're not so affected by those other relationships. But it doesn't mean from your side you should be impersonal or you should be nasty or, it's just that you're less affected by.
Yeah, you're less affected because, not because you're transcendental so much to the other person, to the exchange, but because you see whatever's happening in the exchange as an impetus for you to go to Krishna.
That's from the platform of Gyan. From the platform of Gyan, from knowledge, then anything that happens is an impetus. Yeah, I can see it in that way, that someone it treats you in a difficult way, and you take it as not him doing it to you, but Krishna doing it to you to bring you closer to him. And that's what the example was, Vidura. He was insulted by Duryodhana, and he saw it philosophically that Krishna has a plan to bring me close. It means that I should leave the palace. Or the other example was Maharaj Prickett, when he asked the bull, who has harmed you like this? And the bull would not identify the perpetrator. And then Maharaj Prickett understood that he was religion personified. Because religion personified means always to see God's will. So he actually saw, he wouldn't identify the person who was beating him. He actually saw God making some arrangement for his purification, and that's religion, always to see God. Anything else? James, you have any questions? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.